Welcome into episode 34 with singer-songwriter Nicole Wells. We hope you enjoy it.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Patio Talk Pod,
where we believe everyone has a story.
And we want to share it.
I'm David.
And I'm Cindy.
Welcome to the show. Today on Patio Talk Pod, we've got Nicole Wells. Nicole grew up on the West Coast. She is a singer-songwriter, and we're going to talk to Nicole about singer-songwriter topics today, because I'm not in that business, and neither is Cindy. Cindy is in the music business, but not that part of the music business, so we really want to hear from Nicole and what she has to say. We've recently got to know Nicole and her husband, Steve, and we've just found it a joy to be around her, and we can't wait for you guys to hear from Nicole. And if you get a chance, please do listen to her music at NicoleWellsMusic.com. And I'll have that in the show notes so you'll be able to link to that very easily. But Nicole, thank you so much for coming on with us today.
It's nice to be here.
Welcome to Thanks. The patio.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, so Nicole, like I said in the intro, we've just been very fortunate to be able to get to know you and Steve lately. And you know, and this, I would say something really freaky. This weekend, I met your son, and yeah. I looked at him, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is Steve." I mean, this is Steve when he was young. Oh my goodness! Not that Steve's old.
The funny thing is, he didn't look like Landon when he was young. Landon looks more like me as a teenager. But you know, as he's aged, as they've gotten older, people are like, "Oh, he's a dead ringer." He has my eyes, and I actually looked a lot more like Landon than Steve did. I know that sounds weird, but it's true. If you look back at pictures, I know. But everybody always says that. They're like, "Oh, we know who your dad is." I mean, super obvious. Yeah,
isn't definitely. But I think Chandler looks. I think Chandler looks more like you.
I think too. I would agree. He's basically my dad. Reincarnated, no, not completely, but you know, I mean, he's got my mom's hair and everything else about my dad, so
you must look like your dad, though.
Yeah, I think I do, but I have a lot of my mom, but I'm a really good cross between my parents.
Oh, that's good.
So Chandler has Steve's eyes, but it's me, and Landon has my eyes, but has a lot of Steve. That's the way we describe it.
Yeah, I'm telling you, there's no denying. They are your children.
No, not at all.
Well, that's good.
No denying whatsoever. It is unbelievable. You know, and of course, you see children like that all the time, and you go, "Wow, you look just like your parents."
Yeah, it's spooky.
It's very spooky.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, genetics are amazing.
I love it. So, tell us a little bit about you, Nicole. We want to get to know you. We want to get to know about what you do, and so we want to let our audience know who you are. So let's start off with Cindy. Let's start off with our question that we always ask everyone.
Getting to know you, little segment.
Okay.
So the first question we like to ask is, when it comes to conversation or your thought process, are you like a crock pot? Need time to kind of slow cook, what you're thinking about, or are you an instant pot? Like you can just pop off easily, with your answer.
That depends on the subject, but sometimes I can do that. If I've thought ahead I guess I'd be crockpot. But I mean, if it's like a subject that I'm super passionate about, I can just blah, 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 blah. But most of the time, I'm a crockpot because it's either because I'm going to get tongue-tied, because sometimes I speak too fast and my words will go faster than my brain, so I have to slow down and really think. But I think also because even when I was young, it was always instilled in me to really be careful about the words that I say. And so I take time to think. It could just be also the songwriter in me that I'm always just kind of contemplating on thoughts. But also, I think because I used to say this a little while back, but it was like, I crave simplicity, but I create complexity just in my life. That's just how it goes. So I might as well just take my time and really think about a thought so I say it the way I want, because otherwise I'm going to make everything more difficult in the future.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I like that. I've not heard it put that way before, but that's good.
I haven't either. That's really good.
Yeah.
I put it in a song, but complexity does not sing well. maybe.
It's hard to get that in there, right?
But hard to get that word in.
So what is your favorite childhood memory?
That is like asking me who my favorite child is, honestly, because I had a really great childhood. It is hard to think of one. I mean, just like trying to narrow it down to favorite song, It's like, whew. Are we talking about my parents, my sisters, my cousins, my friends? I think if I had to really, really, really just like, okay, could I sum it all up? Because I came from a musical family, and we were all very close, and all of my relatives were very musical, on both sides, but my mom's particularly, they all were musicians and married musicians. So I think my favorite memory really is, more of a time of childhood, like a season, because Christmas usually meant, so much music. I loved living in Santa Cruz, California. We were in the Bay Area for about 7 years. That was probably my favorite time of childhood. And we would do these great, my dad would put on these big cantatas. We had a smaller church, but everybody was involved. And it's amazing what we actually put forth by being a smaller church. But I just remember loving the whole season of it. And one night, my mom, because my mom was, they're both church musicians and they're very busy during Christmas, you know, and we'd spend time with our cousins, and we'd all sing together all the time. And so it was really fun. But this one night, I remember just, it was around the time that Amy Grant's first Christmas album came out, Christmas album 1983. And it was very different from anything else we'd listened to. And Tennessee Christmas, mm-hmm. you know, with the guitar. And I just
said, it was a sign you would be moving to Tennessee.
Yeah, yeah. That must be why I love this song so much. But I was sitting at the top of the stairs, and my mom had just put the lights on and lit some candles and just played just that album and had some time for herself. And, you know, as a pastor's family, because my dad was a pastor, we're always on the run. You don't ever sit down and do much. Like church, that's our busiest day. Christmas season, busiest time. But it was just like, I think it just spoke something to me as a kid. And now I've always craved that and loved that. And so that I just remember that. That memory of just vividly just watching her sit on the couch and just having like a time of meditation of just sitting and relaxing and just being in the moment. And I don't know, that sat with me forever. That was one of the first things that came to my mind, but it's not my only favorite memory. Yeah. I mean, it's wonderful. I loved my childhood, so I could go on and on about it.
What? What age were you during that time?
83 was, well, I mean, I've listened to it every year since 83, but when was I born?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I was about 7.
Don't have to tell us that. We have to go
there. I didn't know she was going to go back out in the days.
I was about 7 years old, so okay. Yeah, like second grade. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just curious to know if it was like teenage years or
elementary.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And it might have been after that, but like later elementary, but I just remember. It was just a really special time. I loved living there.
That sounds special. Anything around Christmas is usually pretty special. So what is a concert that you have attended that you'll never forget?
Oh, there's going to be a theme. Okay.
Let me guess. Amy Grant.
It really was. Okay, so here's the thing. That wasn't my first concert, but we didn't really get to go to a lot of concerts. They were really expensive, and
they still are.
I know, but back then it probably been like, wow, that was cheap. But I was really excited. I was about 12 years old, and for my birthday, my dad surprised me with my first chance to actually get to go. And it was Amy Grant's "Lead Me On" concert in 1988, and it had Michael W. Smith there. And the reason why I picked this one, because I have a lot of other really great stories, but the reason I'm thinking of this one is because as a musician, already kind of growing up on, my parents didn't let us listen to secular music. So, I mean, as a girl, you're pretty much going to live and breathe Amy and, you know. And so I remember I was at an age where I was so sick and tired of playing the piano. I didn't want to take lessons anymore. And so I just felt like I just wanted to quit, but my mom didn't want me to because she really felt like I had a future with that. So I felt like, I don't know, maybe they knew or God just knew, but I went to this concert and Michael W. Smith opened, and lo and behold, this young man, because he was very young at the time, you know, playing the keyboard, and it suddenly was not uncool. You know what I'm saying? Like it went from, I wanted to play the guitar and do this and that and sing this way, and I was so tired of the piano, and suddenly it was like, oh, well, who's this?
Yeah.
And I was so excited, and it just renewed my passion for it's probably the reason I actually became a composer, and that was my major in college, was composing, because then I got interested in his music as well, and his Christmas album that came out, it's always Christmas, yeah, in 1989, because that was a different kind of Christmas album. You know, had the orchestrations and stuff that you didn't hear in the Christian contemporary Christmas stuff, but he had all the beautiful piano arrangements. And then I just started composing on the piano, and that was my thing I did all through college, was compose piano music. And I wanted to write for film and TV, but I lived in the wrong state, so I never got around to that. Yeah. It was, you know, before all the great technology where it was a lot easier to do. So, but yeah, that's the best concert I ever went to. My mom took me. We went with my best friend and her mom, and it was just, we were way up in the nosebleeds. I mean, you couldn't see anything except for the big Jumbotron thing that shows it to you. But we
were there, though. That was
I was there, and I felt like I was in the front row because it was such a great experience. The sound was great. Yeah, Oakland, California.
I've been there.
Yeah, kind of a scary place to be, but wow, yeah, that was great. Yeah. That was really great.
That's awesome.
So what's one thing that people are generally surprised to find out about you?
Oh, it's the one people go, what? What did I am allergic to water on my skin. And people think that's so weird. And the first question they ask me is, how do you take a shower? So so I might as well just knock that one right off of there. People are always surprised to hear that. But yeah, it can either make me get really chapped really fast or sores, or it will burn. People are like, oh, like, no, not like the Witch of the West. I will not melt. But it's just, it was something I developed when we were living in the Valley of California up in Chico, and we were swimming all the time, and it was really hot. And that same year, my mom became allergic to the sun, and I was allergic to the water, and I just never outgrew it. And it was
interesting.
It made being in a youth group really hard. You know, they want to have water balloon fights or do stuff, or and my friends believe me, and they, you know, they understood, but they'd have to dive in front of me because, you know, when we had a big youth group, so not everybody knew me, and they'd be like, yeah, whatever, yeah, sure you are, sure you're allergic, and they'd want to, you know, chuck it at you. Or you go to a music festival and we're all outside and we're hot, and they want to douse the audience with water to, but I couldn't do that. So they'd all jump over me. And I, of course, that was a disappointing because I was hot too, but I never could get in the water. And it had to be really worth it to me. Like if we went on a water trip, like we were going to go to the water slides or something like that, I would bring my special stuff with me. I wouldn't do the whole day. I'd get out, rinse it off, put all my medicine on. But yeah, it has to be worth it to me to get wet.
Wow.
It's not fun.
Yeah, I forgot you had shared that with us one time before, so I was surprised again.
Yeah.
I had forgotten about it.
It's always the most surprising thing that I tell people because they don't know it exists.
Yeah, it's very unique.
It is unique. I've met people who have it, but when I was in sixth grade, I was the only one that I knew, and it was very frustrating for me.
Sure it was.
Very frustrating.
It had to be.
Oh, yeah. My friend had a pool, and that was like my favorite thing to do. Yeah. Ride my bike to my friend's house and we go swimming. I mean, that was life. You know, when you're in seventh grade. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a bummer.
Let's talk a little bit about your music and what you do now. And let's talk about how you got to Nashville. So, let's start there. How we got to know you and what we know you as from Oregon. But really, you're from the West Coast. You've lived up and down the West Coast.
Yeah.
But I think you've told us that you spent most of your life in Oregon.
Adult life, for sure.
Yeah, for your adult life, exactly. So let's talk about what is it that made you come to Nashville?
Well, honestly, we had tried to get here a long time ago because as a musician, I was having to come out anyway for different things. We visited before Chandler was ever born and thought, man, we love this place. I had won a contest through K-Love and they flew me out here. It was like a lyric contest and I got to attend a conference and it was super fun. And I was just like, I need to be in this place. but we stayed for a while and then in 08 came back out and I was just like, I need to be here. But by the time, part of it was Steve couldn't get a job out here. He tried, but it's interesting in Nashville. It seems like if you don't already have a 615 phone number or an address starts with a 3, you know, it was like they didn't really look at your app.
That's changed now.
Since COVID and everybody working from home, nobody cares anymore.
No.
But before that, I mean, it just, it mattered. And at least in the industries he was in, you know, the stuff he does, it mattered. So we just kind of put off, and the boys really loved where we were living and they were flourishing, so that we weren't in a huge, huge hurry, but I kept having to fly out for things because I was riding either with people or going to conferences or attending, you know, either with a competition or something that I was supposed to, I don't know, all sorts of different reasons. My coach lives here, so he was bringing me out for different things. And so when I would, in 2014, a lot of the opportunities that I had out there, some of them were great. For a few years up through 2013, I was involved in West Coast Songwriters. Mm-hmm. They had like these little things where you would compete. It was a live songwriting contest. And I won the Portland division this one year. It was 2013, and then they sent you down to California, and then all the different districts from all over the West Coast got together, and I won. And I was like, what? And it was like super fun and exciting, and that's kind of how Sarah Bareilles got her start. And so it just seemed like, wow, this is just so amazing. But then it stops there when you live in Oregon, unless you just continue to keep coming out. But every time I'd come, and people go, oh, can we write next week? Well, no, I'm going home. You know what I'm saying? Like, you couldn't put down any roots with, you get these great opportunities because you win something on the West Coast and they send you out here. You don't live here. You just can't make the connections that stick.
Well, that makes sense.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And so, and the music business started to really, really change with the inventions of social media and all this stuff. And the social media, even though I took courses in it back in 2012 and I learned how, I'm so good at this. It changes overnight. So yes. And it kept changing and kept changing. And I thought, if I don't just get where I need to be, like presently in the flesh, I'm always going to be out of touch. And I just couldn't make connections that stuck really hard. I had friends here. You know, they were happy to always house me. Like, hey, yay, Nicole's coming back. But we weren't getting anywhere with music, you know, and co-writing or whatever if I wasn't out here. And again, but this was before everybody had all their abilities to do everything through their phone and online and Zoom. Yeah, and we just hadn't hit that time yet.
Right. I was listening to someone the other day, and they were talking about they co-wrote a song with someone. They're here in Nashville, and mm-hmm. the person they co-wrote the song with was in Hawaii, and they had never met.
Yeah.
They had never met.
Right. Right. You can do that now. It was really hard. Like, all we had was, Skype? You couldn't – when you talk, the other person's voice goes away on Skype.
Right.
So it didn't work very well. You just couldn't – you couldn't make music at the same time. Now, Zoom sort of does that too, and FaceTime kind of does that too, but you still – there's a little bit more of a – I don't know. It does work a little bit better than it did.
Oh, sure. Now.
For a while. It's so much better now. I think just all the different things that have improved.
But I think even
since 2020.
Yeah. Yes. I think even in the last 2 to 3 years, it's changed so much.
It really has.
That you can do so much more.
True.
So I can understand, though, if you're coming out and then you're saying, hey, let's meet next week. I'm not going to be here. Totally get that.
And but really, one of the things you want to do as a writer is you want to be able to play in places, you know, whether it's a listening room or whatever. And if you're not living here, you can't just put your name on a list and hope they call you and you can actually come out that one week, you know, to come out and do things. So if you don't live here, it's really hard to ask to play places. I found that was kind of hard to do from far away.
Does that happen, like, where they will call you maybe that week and say, hey, can you play this weekend? Is it something like that, or is it more – was it harder?
There's just a really long waiting list for a lot of these places. So, and then if you're going to do a competition, like my co-writer recently, her name is Shreya, she just won the Golden Pit contest at Bluebird. And so I went and watched her just this last Monday night. But she submits every single month, and she doesn't know when she's going to win, and she only got, like, maybe a 2 weeks heads up that, oh, yeah, you're the pick. Well, great. Now she's got to get her promo stuff ready, and she's got to make sure she's here and performing that particular night. And I mean, if you don't live around this area, that's awful hard to pull off. Why enter something if you don't know if you can be there? So it just didn't make sense for us to be on the West Coast anymore. But I think one of the reasons that we were stalled is I call it stalled because it felt like, Lord, but there were so many important things that happened with our family out there during that time. Like when Steve's dad was tragically killed in 2016, my dad's Parkinson's and the way it's escalated. I think that it was important that we were there. My boys got to have lots of time with their grandparents. So at the time it was just like, why can't we move? But now looking back, hindsight's always clear. it seems now that it was just better for us to stay there for family reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, but now it makes more sense to be here. I mean, our boys are at Belmont. It makes more sense to be where our kids are, too. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they don't plan on leaving Nashville. They both love it.
Were there a decision to come to Belmont before your decision to move?
Well, I planted the seed in 2014. We did a little cross-country. We had saved up 7 years to drive across-country. This was like this big thing we were going to do because we never took vacations. Steve and I have always had multiple jobs. And so we just hardly took vacation. We were like, we're going to go all the way across. Chandler was huge into geography. He loved maps. And we're like, we're going to let him do the maps. And, you know, even though we had a GPS, we wanted him to actually try to see if he could guess it before the GPS.
Takes
I mean, we
moment.
Had so
no,
much
I think
fun.
That's great.
It was so awesome. And so he had an atlas on his lap and we went, you know, through all the great things. It was like a Disney Fast Pass though, you know, like we only stayed at like you had to run from one thing to the next, like Mount Rushmore for 4 hours, go,
you
know.
were you like Chevy Chase in National Lampoon's when he pulls up the Grand Canyon and says, oh, there it is,
goodbye. Yeah, almost. But we didn't stay long in these locations. Some of them like Yellowstone, it was just a day. It was just a quick trip from one thing to the next and the next and the next. We drove all the way out to Virginia. My sister's in there of D.C. So we came out. That was kind of our goal, get to see their cousins they never see, stay with my sister and everything. We stayed with a lot of family. I have family all over. So we were able to stay with family on the way, had lots of fun. But on the way back, went through Nashville. And I wanted them to meet some of my friends, some of my co-writers, my coach and everything. So we had a great time, but also walk the Belmont campus. And of course, in 2014, it wasn't as big as it is now, but it was still beautiful.
No, it's grown
tremendously. That old side of the campus was just so neat, you know, and Chandler just loves scenery. He's huge into scenery. And Landon just loves anything, you know, music. And so, I mean, they both love music, but I kind of sold them on that.
Sure.
Just kind of walk around. Wouldn't you just love to go here someday? Wouldn't it be great if we lived here and you could go to college here? And, you know, we just kind of planted that seed. And then we came out and looked in 2018 at the actual school where he did the preview. And we brought Landon with us when Chandler previewed it.
Planted the second seed. Yeah.
But they were just absolutely, yeah.
We're sneaky like that as parents.
Oh,
we
yeah.
did the same
yeah.
thing with Lily, with Lee. We're like, hey, wouldn't you really like to go here?
Yeah.
Find this little seat.
Just think about this. Wouldn't it be so much better for you to be independent and you go 3 hours away? Dad can still get to you in a day, but, you know, you're still.
But it was the best thing ever the day she said that she was so thankful that we pushed her, you know, toward that direction. It's
Yeah, well, it was hard for us to send Chandler away. We were still in Oregon.
Yeah, that
I was like, oh, you beat us there. Well, that was no fair.
Oh, it was hard that he beat you.
That's
here.
Huge.
Not the fact that he's so far away from you. Is that what it is?
No, that was sad too. Oh my goodness, I couldn't wait for him to come home at Christmas. But yeah, because he couldn't afford to have him come back Thanksgiving and Christmas. So that was hard. Him not coming home at Thanksgiving time. Oh, that was a horrible semester for me. But, I was a little jealous that he was out here before the rest of us were. But if he hadn't been, Steve wouldn't have been able to come out and stay with him when he had to move off campus because of COVID. Steve came out, lived with him for a while, got the job. I mean, it all worked out in the right order.
That's great. And it did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So now that you're here, mm-hmm. right, you've got to meet some great folks.
Yeah.
I'm sure, even more than what you did before.
Mm-hmm.
You've we've gotten into a church that you're meeting more and more people, and mm-hmm. you're singing at church now with Where We Go.
Yeah.
And so what has been a challenge to you getting acclimated to Southern life?
Every time I visited, it was in the beautiful parts of spring or fall. So we were always here. I was always here when it was nothing like Oregon. It wasn't raining. It was pretty. It was sunny. It was just always blissful for me.
Mm-hmm.
When we moved here, I don't like summer very much because it's very hot and yet it still rains. And I don't like the rains. One of the reasons I didn't like living in Oregon is mm-hmm. it rains too much. So that was the first thing to get used to. I mean, I knew it was going to happen. Chandler had warned me. He's like, Mom, you're going to hate the summer. I mean, it's not like I was surprised. And I'm usually indoors anyway because I'm not in the pool, right? So.
Right.
You know, I'll just, wherever the air conditioning is, Nicole goes. But I don't love humidity. It's sometimes difficult for me.
I don't really know anyone who loves humidity.
No, that's true.
I really don't.
But I think because of my skin stuff, it's not it doesn't feel good to be out in the humidity. It makes me itch, you know? And so I don't like being outside, whereas I love the outdoors, but here in summer, the outdoors are not comfortable for me. Mm-hmm. So that was hard. The potholes are ridiculous because we have amazing roads, and I didn't realize we had amazing roads in Oregon, but it's probably why we pay so much in state tax there.
And we pay no tax here.
We don't have to pay that here, and that's a blessing. But at the same time, I'm like, well, here's why. Mm-hmm. Oregon charges a ton of money because I don't think I even remember seeing a pothole, except for maybe this one that they kept refilling and they finally fixed it right. But when we first moved here and we were living on that stretch of road that goes into Old Hickory out of Madison, it was like, what is this a road?
Yes.
Like I don't even know. What is this?
So the joke that some potholes have their own zip code.
Right. Well, I kept thinking people were trying to run me, like run me off the road because they were driving down the middle of the road. And I was like, they were straddling the middle lane. And those when we first drove in. And I was like, what is going on with these drivers? It's just because they were trying to avoid the potholes. I didn't know that. It's like, they're trying to cut me off. I was scared. It was really late at night. We arrived on the 4th of July. I thought maybe they were all drunk. I didn't know.
No.
But that's not it. So, yeah, the potholes are not my favorite. But most things I actually prefer here. I really love it here. So I don't hate the weather. I hate the weather more in Oregon. At least in that area. We've lived in different places in Oregon. Southern Oregon is not the same as Portland. Portland, to me, though it's beautiful and green, I just couldn't stand the rain anymore because I had to take an umbrella every single where I went all the time, never knowing when I was going to get poured on. It just got to a point where it was like, you can't attend your kid's game, can't go anywhere without getting rained on all the time. And I was just like, get me out of here. I'm wet all the time. Yeah. So,
The first time I ever went to Seattle, for my
that's
company,
worse than Portland.
Everyone that I talked to out there, they were like, "Hey, be ready for the rain. It's going to mist. It's going to be all. It's like a mist all the time, you know."
Yeah.
And I went out there, and it was gorgeous.
Oh, you will get golden days.
Yeah, I flew out there to join him at the end of the week, and it was just beautiful weather the entire time we were there.
And we thought people were crazy. We're like, "What are you talking about? This weather's great. This is fantastic."
What month were you there?
June.
Okay,
so we were like,
So June has golden days, and then days it just pours. But it's not yet hot, like some of the, like August and stuff. It's like a really great time. But if you're there during the Rose Festival Parade, you're going to get rained on. We got married that week, and it does not ever not rain that weekend, which is like the first weekend in June. But yeah, the rest of the time, sometimes you will get the most beautiful days. And when you do get the beautiful days, because there's no humidity, it's just perfect. Like, it's just sunny. The air is clear. You just feel like you could live in it. You feel like you could just lay outside and go to sleep in it. It's perfect.
My favorite place on the West Coast has got to be San Diego, just hands down.
Yes, I agree with San Diego. Yes.
Hands down.
It's so great. It is hot sometimes.
It's time for you to take me there, dear.
I know. I've been there a couple times without her. So
you can just breathe, and everything about it is just great. That is actually my very favorite place I've ever been for weather, ever, is San Diego.
Yeah,
especially in the fall.
Is.
Oh, perfect in the fall.
Yeah, I was just there in November, and it was I was like, oh my gosh, this is perfect. Mm-hmm. It's just perfect. It really was. So I can understand that.
Yeah.
So where do you get your inspiration to write songs?
My earliest inspiration actually came from, because my dad's a pastor, I was sitting on the front pew, always drawing, you know. I don't know. I was about 9 years old, and I just started actually paying attention. And thought, what he just said there, that's an interesting I just decided to start writing lyrics and thinking of things, songs in my head, and it just happened. It just started coming to me, and I don't know, it was really interesting. And then as I got older, I started trying to figure out, okay, could I actually make this up? Like, could I play a part on the piano that would go with it? And I don't think I started learning how to accompany myself at the piano until I was maybe 10 or 11. So I didn't know how to do that at 9, but I could at least pick out the melody so that I could remember, don't forget how this goes. And of course I had my Ghetto Blaster, you know, and so I'd press record and play and try to remember how it went. Oh, they're terrible songs, you guys. So terrible. They're not good. They were obviously written by a 9-year-old, but, you know, and I didn't share them with people. They were just kind of like my own little thing I did for a while. But by the time I was 14, our family used to travel and sing concerts. That was kind of our way of seeing family across the United States. We would go and sing in churches, camps, events, things like that. And they would take up love offerings. And that would be our gas money and our restaurant money to get to the next place. And we would stay with family and everything. So it was really fun. But when I was about 14, I started act like they started saying, okay, well, why don't you start putting some of your own songs and we'll start to sing them. And so sometimes it would be a worship song I'd write and we'd teach it to the congregations we go to. And so, you know, I'd get to play it this time. So my mom usually was the one playing the piano, but I would play the ones that I wrote. If it wasn't worship, it was just a, you know, like more of a CCM kind of song that I would just sing it as a solo or whatever. And then just kind of grew from there. And I just never stopped.
Still today, the same?
But now where I get my inspiration from is just, oh, all of life. I think my favorite songs that I've written, all but maybe three, came from journal entries. A whole album that I actually released called Restore all came from journal entries that I had done through kind of just this healing time in my life. And so like one of them, it's called What If He Rides. It was completely inspired by teaching Landon to ride a bike. He's my wild card, and I never really knew what he would do, and I was always terrified of what he might do, and he would have confidence, but then he wouldn't, you know, and so I was terrified to let go of the bike because I just didn't know. I mean, he was the one that ran into the side of the doghouse and cut right through his face on his bike, so we just never really knew, and I was always probably a little bit extra protective of him because of some of the challenges he had, and so he just kept telling me to let go. And I had this feeling of, no. And I actually felt, it was like a Holy Spirit moment. I felt him say, you need to let go of the bike, let go. And I was like, ah, what if he falls? What if he falls? And then it was like, he just said, what if he rides? And I was like, and it made me cry. It kind of makes me a little teary now because I remember thinking like, oh man, at five, because of some of his sensory issues and things, I was always still doing everything for him. Like everything. You know, walking him to the kitchen. Let's put this here. Let's wash your hands. He didn't do anything on his own because I was like steering him around the house. Not completely. I'm exaggerating, but I just realized I needed to let go more. And it just went into this whole song about needing to let go because sometimes those whys, you know, that the ones that like what ifs that bring fear can also, you know, what about the what ifs that bring hope? And so, you know, when you know that God's got this kind of thing. And so that whole song was written off. I just journaled and journaled about that story, and then it just gave birth to a song. So a lot of them come that way. Or it's when somebody goes, I need a song about this or that. Please, a pastor of mine said, we don't have enough songs on Unity. Can you write one on Unity we can sing? That's where that would come from. Or I'm writing
a song.
Does
that create, like, a lot of pressure? Like, when you know they're, like, asking you to, like, are they giving you, like, a time frame they want it?
Well, if there's a time frame, yeah. Sometimes that's scary.
Yeah.
Especially if it's a worship song, because I want it to be Spirit-led. But God usually just brings it about then if it's something that – I actually write better when there's a need. When there's something that, like, if there is a time constraint – if I have a deadline, I'm going to do better. I'm going to focus better. And especially if there is an actual need for it, like – oh, I need to say this to so-and-so and I need someone to help me write it. Or I really wanted to write a song for my mom for Mother's Day. I needed to get it done by then, so I wrote it. I'm currently writing one about my dad. Actually, I finished it, but I'm currently getting ready to record it. I was supposed to record a while back, but then I got COVID and I was so bummed. Yeah. I had to cancel my studio session. But yeah, it's just when there's a need and something that there's a specific reason, I love writing those the most. But as a writer, I've learned if you don't just keep doing it, though, as a practice, whether or not the song's going to go anywhere, it doesn't really matter all the time. But you have to be in the habit of doing it, or you do lose the muscle. You know, it comes back.
Sure.
But yeah, when I wasn't using it for a while and I was only focusing on my students and teaching and working on the things they were doing and not really exercising my own writing muscle, it took me a while to get back into the swing of things. I felt very rusty when I moved here. So yeah, but I'm coming alive again.
good. That is very good.
That's
very coming
good.
Alive. I love that. And so you just, it's hard for me to just think about, like you were thinking about letting go of the bike and it came to you. What if your eyes and God shows it to you? Sometimes it's hard for me to see that, you know, and how to express that. I think it's just beautiful that you can express it and that you can put it into words and you can then make a song out of it. Mm. I think that's just, that's where the talent side comes in, right? Because not all of us have that, and we can't display it that way.
Yeah, and honestly, some people have different gifts. Like Landon is an amazing medley guy, a melody guy, excuse me, not medley. He can come up with a tune faster than it's just amazing. Struggles more with the lyric. For me, it's a lyric comes to me a little bit faster. And so some people just have different gifts, or it's where they've exercised the muscle the most. Mm. I think because I didn't have a lot of ways to put out on music what I was hearing in my head, like on the guitar, I really wanted to, but I wasn't yet a guitar player or whatever, or the way that people can produce nowadays with stuff. I worked more on my lyrics. I just focused more on that. And I was actually, that was my subject in school. I was good at like writing papers, writing stories, stuff like that. I was better at that than I was coming up with something quick. You know, I just loved focusing on the idea of the words. Whereas like Landon will just be like, man, the melodies, he comes up with so many of them over and over again. But then he'll be like, does this make sense? And I'll be like, nope. You know, as far as lyrics are concerned, you know what I mean?
Right.
He's gotten a lot better at that. But again, that's what I mean. Like there's a talent piece, but there's also a practice piece. He has practiced on his lyrics and he's gotten way better. I have practiced on trying to make a great hook and a melody. And so I've gotten better. Mm. And so I think there's two pieces to that.
You know, we could look at it with our daughter, Lily. She's mm-hmm. very creative and mm-hmm. talented. And prior to college, we thought she was going music. Mm. I mean, totally. We were doing guitar lessons. She was songwriting. They had a singer-songwriter club in school, in high school. She wrote a few songs. That, you know, of course, we're biased, mm-hmm. you know, and we don't know music. And we're thinking, well, that song is fantastic. But we had other people saying the same.
Yeah, hey, this song she had her course teacher that told her she had $1 million song and told us to, like, protect it. But we never could get her to pursue
it. She wouldn't pursue it. She still got it. We've never let it out.
We're like, this could pay for college. You know, you get someone, you know, like a Taylor Swift to want your song, you know, which knows she writes her own. But
yeah, but, I mean, so she has that. So we see that with her. And then she's carried that over into her photography. Mm-hmm. She sees things mm-hmm. before she snaps that picture
sure.
that we don't see at all. Mm-hmm. We look at her and go, how did you see yeah. this? She said, I don't know. It was just there. Right. I knew it was there. And I just had to capture it. I think it's a beautiful thing with talented folks such as yourself who can capture those moments and then give them to the rest of us
right.
for us to be able to enjoy them. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really love. I love music. I love photography and I love music, but it's not that I'm not a singer-songwriter and I'm not a photographer. But I love it because I love those who are talented mm-hmm. like you can share it with the rest of us.
Music.
And we can be able to enjoy it.
Yeah, well, music can be healing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it can bring joy when you're down. Mm-hmm. And if you just need to be sad when you're a teenager right. and you're going through a breakup, yeah. oh. there's plenty of breakup songs to listen
to. Oh, the melancholy songs I wrote as a teen. I showed them to my dad because he's a songwriter. And I would show them to him. So you like this one? Do you like this one? I remember one time he finally went, honey, are you okay? Just kind of put his hand on my knee like, are you all right? And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, I'm just noticing a kind of a depressed theme. And I was like, really? And I was just like, I thought I was just expressing some, because sometimes I'm not writing by myself. I'm writing about things my friends might have told me.
Right.
You know, and I'm just trying to process their grief or their frustration or their, and so, yeah, I just remember him going, I'm kind of concerned. Like, what this
You're
means.
Like, I'm great, but yeah. Susie down the street isn't. Is not. Yeah, that's what I'm writing about.
Totally not
great. Exactly. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I think that's the thing about, like, when you're talking about her photography is, I think that's why it's a hard area to be your vocation, an artist of any sort, because it is kind of sometimes all about the moment. And yes, we do need to work and try to, okay, we can create moments, but sometimes we can't create the moment. It's this thing that just comes and happens and, hopefully you've done all the work that you've needed to do to be able to make it come together quickly, you know, that kind of thing. But it is hard to bring something out of nothing that is also going to help bring life into somebody else as well. Sometimes you have something great and sometimes you don't. So
what does your creative process look like? How does it work for you?
Oh, it depends on the genre. It really does. I wish I had a really quick, easy, and step-by-step answer, but it's really not like that.
So what about, like, I'm thinking of your latest song, and it's
Just Like Coffee.
Just Like Coffee. Oh, yes, thank you. I knew it was coffee. Like, maybe use that as an example when you were creating that.
It's not the most recent one I've written, but it is the most recent one I recorded. So let me think back. I actually wrote it in 2014. Let's see.
We're not putting you on the spot.
No. I'm just trying to think back to, I love metaphors, first of all. And I had not really, most of my songs were so faith-based. And my sister and I were playing a lot more just, I mean, we played in a lot of bars and, or at farmers markets or places where there was just not a, like, you just want to also just have a really fun love song to sing that didn't really necessarily be overtly Christian. Right. I don't know. I just thought I want to just kind of dabble in some, he wasn't around in my world yet, but like more like Ben Rector would do, where it's more like it's clean and it's beautiful, but it's also not overtly Christian, you know? And so I just decided to start writing. So I have a few like that, that are kind of more like more of a pop folk kind of genre that wouldn't probably fit in some of the pop world. But I don't know, for that particular one, I was so obsessed with coffee so much for a while that, I developed, it's a kind of, it's called silent reflux, where you don't really know you have reflux, you have no symptoms, but it took my voice away. And so it was really sad because as I was working on the song, I actually did lose my voice for 6 months once before that. We didn't know what it was. And then later it happened in 2012 and I lost it for 3 months. Couldn't speak, like Ariel, you know what I mean? Little Mermaid, no voice at all. And I had to give up coffee and it was just the worst thing in the world giving up coffee. Like I thought I was going to die. You know what I mean? Like this is the most terrible thing in the world.
Because, I mean, I drink coffee, but I'm not.
No, I do get it.
Okay, but here's the thing. I think what I was really addicted to, unfortunately, was the Vanilla International Delight cream I was putting in it. But
with a little bit of coffee.
Yeah. But the two of those flavors combined made this frenzy for my brain. And it just, I was like, woo! And I could drink coffee at night, late at night. I drink a whole pot at night. I could still sleep. It did not matter. I just loved it so much. And so one time I was writing, I was working, I was having sessions with my coach, and Mark Colley is his name. And we were just kind of, I was working on this. I was like, I just really want to write a fun love song. And I had my ukulele, was new to me, and I was trying to write a song on ukulele. And I was like, but I just really want to write about coffee. And I just thinking, you know, it's like this addiction. I just can't give it up, but yet. And he's like, well, why don't you just start to describe the coffee? Just start describing it to me. And what about it do you love? So I started thinking about how it was warm and it makes you feel cozy. And, you know, and pretty soon it was like it just developed into this, well, love is that way, you know, a relationship that you feel warm and cozy about. And, you know, even if you could, you're not going to give it up. And, and that's just how the concept came to life. And, yeah, he kind of just helped me work through that. He wasn't a co-writer, but yet at the same time, he did help me through the process of thinking on that one. He was really valuable in those days, helping me talk through some of the songs whenever I get stuck. But that one,
it's a good song.
I loved writing that one. It was so much fun. It's my dad's. It's so funny. I've written all these worship songs, and he uses them in church because my dad is a worship leader. Currently, because of his illness, he's not able to be, but he helps. But that's his favorite song I ever wrote, which is so funny to me because I would think of all these, you know, I grew up on Christian music because they wanted me only to listen to Christian music. And we grew up singing worship and leading worship with our parents. And yet he loves my coffee song and that song about love. And he always would have requested
it when we were performing. Probably really likes coffee too. Is that what it is?
He doesn't drink it that much, really. No, he doesn't. It's really kind of funny. He just really loves that song. And I just thought that was so funny. I never would have guessed that'd be his favorite one, but apparently it is.
That's an awesome story. I mean, yeah. It really is a good song.
Thank you.
It really is.
Thank you. I really enjoy it. I had so much fun writing that one.
So we have taken up a bit of your time, but we're so thankful that you were able to come on with us. And so what are you working on currently? Mm. If there's anything that we haven't asked you that you would like to share, please do that.
I'll start with what I'm working on currently. Because of my injury, I felt like I got kind of stunted when I first moved here, you know, couldn't get in a car and drive and meet people. So I'm finally connecting with co-writers. Really loved really love my youngest co-writer, who's from Belmont. She's a sophomore, Belmont, Shreya. She's just like walking sunshine. She's so fun. And she doesn't make me feel old. So I really like
that's always good.
It's so nice. Yes. I also have connected with a worship writer recently, that we're going to start writing some songs here in March. And I think it's kind of nice to be feeling like I'm making the co-writing relationships again. So that's something new. Because so much of what I've had to do recently has been all by myself, and it's harder to be motivated. When I would like to have said I've already recorded the song that I wrote for my dad, because that one is very near and dear to my heart, and I'm super excited about finally getting that one done. So eventually, that one will finally be done, but I really want Landon to play on it, and trying to coordinate our schedules is really hard with him being at Belmont right now. He's so busy. And it's mainly because he's the grandson. I mean, guitar players around here dime a dozen, and anybody could play it, but I want it to be my son.
Well, that's special.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, because it's about my dad. So that's a new, a project that I'm working on. And also, I'm thinking, because I'm a teacher, I mean, my main source of income for 35 years has been teaching piano. And then I started doing that apprenticing under my mom when I was 12. So I had this business when I was 15. And I started adding to it. Sometimes people are like, well, we want you to teach us voice. I'm like, well, I don't know if I can teach voice, but I just learned how. But I don't specialize in it. But what I do teach voice is usually to confidence, how not to ruin your voice. Mm-hmm. And I do know enough to teach people who are wanting to learn how to maybe audition for shows. And so I worked with a lot of musical theater kids. I just don't take on the people who want to learn to speak Italian and, you know what I mean? Like do the classical stuff.
Right.
That's not where I'm not equipped to teach classical voice, but I can do the rest. So I started adding that to my studio. I don't do a lot of that now. I only have a couple of those, but because of this, because I don't really feel like I have a time to really grow the studio the way we had it. I mean, my boys were teaching. We had all the instruments going. We had recitals. We had events. It was fun. We just had this whole thing as a whole business that we had running. And I don't think I can start that up now. But for income, I'm actually thinking about, this is something new I'm working on, is now that we're in this age of putting just product up for people to get online, I'm thinking, well, if I don't really have all the time to actually teach one-on-one, why not just start creating my own, like, oh, here's how I can even teach people how to teach. I taught my voice how to teach. This is how I teach people the key signatures, you know? So that I haven't completely fully conceptualized how it's going to go. A lot of it might just depend on how long it's going to take me to create this, but that way I can kind of extend my business more where it's just there and people can access it when they need it and not have to try to schedule with me. So I'm free to write and do what I feel called to do. But yet I still love teaching and I still love my students. My heart is always, that's one of my spiritual gifts is teaching. And so I love that part of my life. I don't want to let it go. I just don't have as much time to have a whole studio. I just have my handful. I have like my 3 to 5 at a time I have right now. And that's good for me right now. I don't think I could put on big recitals right now, but I used to, and it was so much fun, but I feel like that stage is gone and it's time to open a new chapter. So it's not songwriting necessarily, but it can be, because if people are wanting to, I mean, I could make, really, nowadays you can make anything about anything.
That's true. Absolutely.
And be like, hey, so lessons by Nicole about how she would do this and how she would teach this or how she would go about this. And I feel like, not like I have amazing wisdom to impart to everybody. There's so many people doing this sort of thing, but I mean, why not?
Why not?
Why not? Why not? Why not?
That's the way we feel about podcasting. There's millions of podcasts.
Sure. Yeah. Right. Why not?
There's millions, but I mean, why not? Each story we feel is valuable and needs to be told. Mm-hmm. Your techniques and what you do is valuable and needs to be shared.
Yes.
I fully believe that.
Well, thank you. I mean, I don't feel the need to just like hang my hat on it. You know, I'm like, bye-bye, well done. You know, I think it's just something I should always just keep pursuing. And I need to grow at it too. If I completely stop teaching, I think I'm going to stop growing. And I don't want to stop growing. I want to have a reason to have to keep practicing the piano, you know? And so
using that muscle.
Pretty soon, I think, we just had a conversation about it today, I think pretty soon I'm going to start playing keys at church, which is a whole different ballgame than playing for worship the way I have always, I am more the Michael W. Smith from the piano kind of worship. That's the way I've always led, way I played. And this is a whole different ballgame. I mean, it's mainly like, you know, everything's sequenced and it's a lot of computers.
Right.
So you got to know how to program. And I'm kind of excited to see how to use my piano skills in that way. It'll be all brand new. So
that's beautiful. I mean, you're continuing to challenge yourself to continue of growth. Mm-hmm. And I think that's awesome. I really do.
It'll make me a better teacher too, because I mean, I don't want to be irrelevant to people saying, hey, I want to learn to play worship. And I'm like, here. And I give them a chord chart. And they're like, we don't use these at our church. Oh, yeah. They're not doing that very much anymore. Shoot. It used to be hymns. Then it became, you know, chord charts. And now it's like, oh, new ball game. Changing all the time.
A whole new ball game. It is. Nicole, thank you so much for coming on. Would you share with folks where they can find your music and where they can find more about you?
Sure. Well, I mean, if it was something I released, and some of the things were released a long time before Spotify existed, that's actually the funny thing. I released albums because I just wanted to be able to have CDs, and you go through CD Baby and they put it up online. But back then, I think there was only iTunes, you know, and so now you can find them on Spotify. You can find it on Apple Music, Amazon. And so it's funny. Some of the songs aren't ones I would actually probably have released. But they're on an album, so I can't take them down, or the whole album has to come down. I don't want to take the whole album down. So please don't judge all of them. But some of them are recorded very poorly. They were like, you know, in my attic. Some of them were recorded professionally. So, but yeah, you can find it all on, like, all the way dated back to probably 2010 on Spotify, on Apple Music, on Amazon, all the places where they stream music. They're there. On my website, it just more talks about who I am. I have my little about page that I have my more about. So, like, if somebody really wants to read an in-depth thing, they can, if they really want to. I sometimes run song circles where, you know, songwriter nights. So I have a little thing on the bottom of my webpage where people can kind of see where I bring in songwriters and we do a songwriter night. And the one that's featured on there was at a charcuterie place. And it's just, yeah, things like that. Just, you can kind of go in there, see what I'm about. I would love to sing more backup vocals for things. So I have, like, kind of that's part on my website, like, something I'd like to pursue. And so, you know, it's kind of more just a landing page for people to go to, and they can make their way around the site until they, you know, I don't know. You can listen to a few songs on there, but I only put just a few up. And then most of them, if you want to hear the rest, are either not released, so you can't hear them yet, or they're on, you know, every place you can stream music. So,
all right, fantastic. Cool. We have one last question for you before we let you go.
Yes. So if you were sitting on a patio and could talk to anyone, who would you talk with and where would your patio be?
And this person could be with us today or passed on.
Oh, or passed on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it can't be Jesus.
That's just too easy.
Isn't it? But I mean, but seriously, I have so many wonderful questions for him.
Well, I think maybe one day we'll get to ask. Maybe.
Yeah. You know, okay. Yeah. So since I know I'm guaranteed probably get to do that, let me think. You're probably gonna have to cut out my long pause. I'm gonna give. You
I
right
do with
now.
Most people.
Nicole, yeah, because so I'm gonna. Really
I feel like we're just staring a hole into her, so let's not look at it.
Why is this so hard?
Well, you know,
you're put on the spot.
You're put on the spot, and it's one of the questions that we ask all of our guests.
And it doesn't have to be like somebody that, like, you know, the level of Jesus. That's deep thought conversation. It could just be a comedian that would be hilarious to sit on a patio with. So,
She's really putting some thought in
there. Yeah.
I'm sorry that I'm putting so much thought into this, but I'm the crock pot. Like I said, I'm like, oh, it matters what I say.
You know I'm going to use some of this, right?
Oh, I'm certain. Yeah. Okay. I think because you said it could be somebody who's passed. I'm not sure about necessarily the patio, but I would like to talk to the Apostle Paul. And I think the reason why is because I have a lot of questions I'd like him to clear up, because there's too much divisiveness in the church over things he said that I don't think that the people are reading correctly. I would like to know, since he wrote it as a letter and he didn't put headers, he didn't have numbers, and he didn't write it in English, I would love I would just love to hear his thoughts. I would love to hear the conversion story from his point of view again. Mm-hmm. I would love to hear, you know, the inspiration and what that felt like to have that from the Holy Spirit. But I think I'd also just really love to hear why he said certain things. I would love to hear that just from his voice. And I think that because I know that it's so beautiful over there, you know, maybe some of these places where he wrote from, just, I've never been to the Holy Lands.
And yeah, I haven't either.
I've never even been to Greece. And I took Greek for 7 years. So I would love to go. I mean, it's so beautiful. I see pictures and they look so beautiful. I would love to just maybe, I don't know, sit on somebody's patio that overlooks the, I don't know, the Sea of Galilee or something. It doesn't have to be Greece. Sure. It can be anywhere. It could be, I don't know, any of those places over there that they walked and traveled. And I don't know. They look so beautiful in the pictures.
They do.
So
I feel like when I'm thinking
of patios, I'm like, I want it to be someplace I've never been. And I've never been to that area of the world. And so that's why I would pick that. And because I just have a lot of questions for him.
Yeah. That's a great answer, Nicole.
And you need a relaxing, you know, patio to sit on.
Right. And I
questions.
Love water. Please give me a view with water. I mean, that's just because I can't go in it a lot doesn't mean I don't love the way it looks.
You like to look at it, sure. Yeah.
I grew up on the beach. I mean, I love the water. So, yeah.
That's a great answer. So oh, there's good. No wrong answer. Yeah,
good, good. I'm glad. No, boy, that was really hard.
And so I would conversation never thought. And your place to have it, so.
Exactly. But wouldn't it be nice to hear it straight from his mouth?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
In the original intention and the way it was really worded and what he really thought. And because, you know, I'm sure, like, just now, even with this podcast, I didn't say everything. I didn't tell you all. There's so much of my story I left out. There's so many questions you couldn't ask. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the same way with the Bible. And, you know, there's just some things that aren't there. And that's okay. You know, what God needs us to have is there. But I don't know that we always read it correctly. I don't think that we're looking at original language enough. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important that we do. So
I couldn't agree with you more. Couldn't agree with you more. Well, that's a beautiful answer. It was a beautiful conversation. I'm so glad that you were able to come and
yes, thank you so much for joining us.
That's so fun. Thanks, guys.
Well, good. Yeah. So this is your first one, right?
It's my first podcast.
I bet it's not going to be your last. So, guys, thank you for listening to us tonight or today or whenever it is you're listening. And we'll talk to you.